So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review.
Ric Flair. So you're the developer. I thought you'd be in a pond hiding under the scum where you'd feel at home.
Oh, Hogan, it's wonderful as always to see you again. And Macho Man, last time I saw your face, man, it was under my shoe.
What are you doing with your time now that you're a washed-up ex-wrestler, Flair?
You know what they say, brother. Those who can do, those who can't, don't.
Well, if that's the case, you'll appreciate this. For starters, man, I bought the property. You got it? In a week, it'll all be mine. But today, I'm here because I'm closing the gym down, big boy.
You can't do that.
Oh, little lady, that's where you're wrong. I'm the nature boy. I've got the documents. Soon, this'll all be condos. It'll all be mine.
Why don't you put your money where your sorry excuse for a mouth is, Flair?
Hey, Hogan, as usual, your words hit harder than your fist, man.
A fight. One-on-one, no holds barred. Winner take all. All this property, Flair.
Oh, man, doesn't that sound delightful? What's a collateral, Hogan?
Something that you could never hang on to, Flair. The WCW heavyweight title, brother.
Wait a minute, I call the shots. We're making a team. Me and Vader and Macho Man, I want you right here, right now.
I'd love to tear you apart.
Hey,
hell.
A team wins both matches or all bets are off.
And whose head am I going to have the pleasure of ripping off, Flair?
No, chump. It's Vader time. It's going to rip your head off.
You? I was hoping I'd have to have a match where I had to keep my eyes open, Vader.
Saturday, on the beach, and bring escrow papers, Flair.
Welcome to Review Away, everyone. Episode number 155, by my calculations. I could be off by a few numbers, but who knows? The not even top 10 longest-running episodic podcast on the internet. But thanks for joining us. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. And Wei, you feel so distant this week.
Do I sound distant?
No, you don't, actually. You sound pretty clear. Though you do sound a bit stuffed up.
Right. Well, that is because I am actually not in attendance in the Review Away studios this week. I am actually doing this from home. Sorry to ruin the magic.
Well, out of protest, I'm doing this in an alternate studio as well. I didn't feel comfortable doing the show without you in the Review Away studios. So now we are in the editor's studio.
Yeah, I would have probably contaminated you with something, whatever I have, if I was in the same room with you.
Yeah.
I quarantine.
Now, is this a subtle statement from you, Wei, that when you're sick, you'll still do the show, whereas me, I missed a show this year due to sickness?
No, not at all. Never meant that.
Wei is tougher than Pollock, is what the subtext of this podcast is.
Not at all. The illness could be different, what you and I had. I don't know what I have, but yeah.
How are you? Are you on the road to recovery now? You feeling better?
Yeah, I think so. I think it just requires rest. It's not anything that is serious at all.
You were out this past weekend with me for jiu-jitsu class.
Yes, we were. We returned to open that MMA with the excuse me.
Oh no,
one of those. It's going to be one of those shows. We went for our second class at Open Mat MMA with our coach Elliot Baev, and re-drilling a lot of what we learned that first time. And I had a great time, as usual.
And we had a guest with us, Wei.
One Jason Agnew, yes.
To which we arrived, and Jay walked in. Hey, Wei. Whoa! What are you doing here? I stunned myself because I was telling Mr. Agnew about what we were doing on Saturday, and he showed a bit of interest, but I did not read it to mean anything. But sure enough, the next morning he messaged me saying he was down to come.
That's and awesome.
The three of us went to jiu-jitsu on Saturday.
In fact, I believe he's going to have Elliot on his on the late shift.
Is that- yes. Thursday yes. night at 10 o'clock on News Talk 1010 in Toronto. If you want to hear Jason Agnew chatting with his Brazilian jiu-jitsu coach, Elliot Baev, he will be on his radio program, The Late Shift. So you can check that out Thursday night, right after Impact ends.
Right afterwards, yes.
Perfect, perfect segue there. Mm-hmm. But today, Wade, we are going back to 1996, season 6 of Baywatch. And this was your selection, and what drove you to pick this one? Because this is an obscure pick, but a hidden gem, I believe, in wrestling history.
Somebody had posted this somewhere on our boards, I believe, and I just always kept it in the back of my mind. Mainly, it was because I was just sick of watching 3-hour pay-per-views, and I enjoyed this break, this 1-hour show with Pam Anderson and Hulk Hogan on the same program.
Unbelievable. Just a year after she appeared at a WrestleMania 11, here she is jumping ship, so to speak, with WCW.
That's right. She was really, really popular at that time.
This was her peak. This was, I think, right before or right after the sex tape with Tommy Lee.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
I would classify that as her peak.
She was credited as Pamela Lee in this.
So it would have been after the sex tape.
I really don't know.
Well, I'm just
that's a discussion for next week.
Should have had Pamela Anderson on the show so we could get the timeline straight.
Yeah. Yeah, well, did you try?
No, I did not, but I really should have. There were lots of people here we could have spoken to. I was a Baywatch fan as a youngster. I used to watch this show pretty regularly, actually. And I guess this was around the time where I think I started to get out of it. And I had never watched this episode of Baywatch with the WCW crew. So this was a brand new, hour of content for me. Did you ever watch Baywatch when you were younger? And have you ever watched Baywatch before?
I've seen Baywatch before, absolutely. I don't know, what teenage boy has never seen Baywatch? But I don't think it was, I never knew when it was on. It would just be like something that you would flip through channels and see. But I did actually see this particular episode. I don't remember much from it. I don't remember the storylines or anything, but I saw it, and what stood out to me were, the wrestling scenes with sound effects. So, like, these guys would throw punches, and you would all of a sudden hear, like, kung fu sound effects, like, ch, ch, ch. I just thought that was so weird.
It sounded terrible. Like, it really was horrendous, actually.
Thing is, like, they are, whenever you see wrestling portrayed in non-wrestling programming, they treat it as if it's real. And so it... So they treated these wrestling matches as extended fight scenes. It's just another example in a long line of programs where the people don't really know how to treat this weird thing, professional wrestling. It just sounds so weird.
Yes, and I guess we'll get into kind of the plot lines throughout the show, because it was really like watching two different episodes, Way, because we had the wrestling storyline and the skin cancer storyline. Two themes in the world that go hand in hand.
Yeah, pro wrestling and skin cancer, sure.
Yeah, that was the backdrop for this show, which I don't know which version you watched, Way, but we started it off with the iconic theme song, one of the best television theme songs in television history that I think everyone has hummed to themselves. And if you're like me, you used to burn to a CD, and then when you went with your friends to Wasaga Beach and you drove down the beachfront area, you blasted it on your speakers as people were jogging and laughing your ass off.
That's hilarious.
I've gotten so much entertainment over the years from the Baywatch theme song. This used to be my answering machine.
Wow.
You just call and you would get the Baywatch It wasn't the ringtone. This was before ringtones. You would get the answering machine, and for 30 seconds you would hear "I'll Be Ready" by whoever did this song.
You were an interesting kid.
I was a weird kid. I love Baywatch.
Chilling Tamagotchis. Baywatch theme. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Who was your favorite on Baywatch?
I think everyone was a big Pamela Anderson fan at the time, just because I had never seen a boob so big before in my life than the opening credits, where she would be slowly walking across the beach, and it just, I was, as an 11-year-old boy, I just looked at that, and I didn't think it was possible for a woman's chest to come out so far, that it was just, like, it was hot, but at the same time concerning for me.
Yeah.
They were massive.
You're just wondering about their back problems.
It was probably, for a lifeguard, it would present issues later in life.
Well, for all these lifeguards, I mean, it's not exactly the most, I don't know, I wouldn't trust this woman to run at me in full speed with those things.
Well, she certainly wasn't going to drown with those, so that's a point in her favor.
Yeah.
Yasmin Bleeth I was a big fan of, but then she got into, like, a bunch of, like, drunk driving charges, I think, and, I don't know. I find that to be a bit of a turnoff.
Right.
How about you, eh? Which ones struck your fancy?
I don't know. I never really had any favorites. It was just, I don't know, turn it on and whatever.
What actually got me into Baywatch was I was a big fan of the movie Jaws. And, of course, it follows Chief Brody. And the first episode I ever watched involved a shark attack, and one of the lifeguards, his name was Matt Brody, and I assumed there was some connection between this show. This was like a spinoff of Jaws, and that's how I got interested in it, and there was actually zero connection.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Bruiser Brody, that there was some connection to Bruiser Brody.
So, there was actually zero connection between Jaws and Baywatch.
That's unfortunate.
We move on to the show, and I guess they had Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Nature Boy Ric Flair, Big Van Vader, and the Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan. And that is how they were credited during the opening here, Way.
It was Terry Hulk Hogan.
Terry Hulk Hogan, you are right.
Yeah.
The Taskmaster.
You know, this was, what, 1995, and we hadn't really broken down those walls yet, at least not into the mainstream. And we still really haven't, you know? Like, the Triple H is still called Triple H when he's, The Miz is still called The Miz on when he goes on Conan O'Brien. It's, wrestling is just, I don't know if we'll ever get over that.
The opening scene features Hogan and Savage racing on their Sea-Doos, and it ended with Hogan flipping over on his Sea-Doo, looking up to the sky, and his Sea-Doo lands on top of his head, and his selling here, his grunting, clearly we know what the impetus was behind his recent return to TNA, Way, because this was him selling a Sea-Doo injury when he returned to TNA. These grunts and, his heavy selling.
Was that how he was injured last time?
Well, I'm just saying, when he returned, he did all these grunts that was reminiscent here as he got hit by a Sea-Doo in the head.
Oh, this sounded so bad. It was just some post-production yelling here. It was very funny.
What's funny here, Way, is that back at WrestleMania 9, when Hogan showed up and he had that black eye, the story was that him and Savage had some kind of a boating accident. And that's why he had his eye shut. So I wonder if that was played any... That at least was the story that went around. There were other stories that Savage punched him, and then Hogan always maintained it was some boating injury. So maybe, prior to WrestleMania 9, a Sea-Doo landed on his eye.
Maybe.
So this led to Hulk Hogan being dragged to shore by Yasmin Bleeth and Pamela Anderson. The acting here, folks, was just from start to finish on this show, just something to behold. As Pamela Anderson gave him mouth to mouth and then realized, oh my God, it's Hulk Hogan. And Hogan comes to, what do you know? I did get to heaven. So Hulk Hogan, not concussed, not cut, not even bleeding, not even selling a Sea-Doo to the head from 30 feet in the air.
Well, I don't think they're allowed blood on Baywatch.
I guess not. It was clearly PG programming at this time, Way.
Mm-hmm.
PG topics like Pamela Anderson's tits and cancer.
Yeah.
Nothing appeals to children more. So Savage eventually comes and finds him, and that's basically the setup here, is that Hogan and Savage are just out for a day at the beach and get saved by the lifeguards, and they're indebted here to these lifeguards.
And they play Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. They don't play actors portraying them. This is Macho Man talking like Macho Man throughout this entire episode. And they're portrayed as like real fighters, you know, people that fight for real for a living.
This was the UFC fighters of the day, I guess. Even in 96 when UFC was around, these were the tough guys in the world.
How long ago had Savage and Hogan been to the WCW by this point?
Well, both came in 94, so this would have been taped probably mid 95, so about a year, 6 months to a year for each of them into the company. So they were relatively fresh to WCW. And I mean, at the time, I mean, Baywatch was a huge show at this time. So, I mean, this was a big deal, I'm sure, for WCW to get their talent onto a major show like Baywatch in 95, 96, this would have run. So, yeah. As we mentioned, there were kind of the A plot and the B plot on this episode. And the other one featuring Lieutenant Stephanie Holden. And she's dating, Mitch's old friend, and Mitch would be David Hasselhoff, who kind of just plays the head guy here at the beach.
Yeah, the boss.
The best friend. The best friend, Stephanie.
Yeah, Alexandra Paul plays Stephanie.
Alexandra Paul.
And they used to date, I came to deduce.
Yes, actually, that it later, the infamous line, "What are ex-boyfriends for?"
Right.
It chooses.
These two used to date, and now Alexandra Paul is dating David Hasselhoff's best friend.
Yes, a doctor. And this leads to a scene on the beach where they're having a picnic together, and a pager goes off, Way. I didn't even know what this contraption was. A pager.
Yeah.
And he's been summoned. He has to get to work, and Stephanie says, "Well, I think I'm having a medical emergency myself. It's my heart," with this cheesy softcore porn music underneath this.
Oh, man.
Anyway, and this is where the music gets a little dire, because all of a sudden, boyfriend spots a mole on the back of Stephanie's leg.
He's a dermatologist, by the way.
Amazing coincidence. And she says, "Oh, I put sunscreen on all the time." And he replies, "There's no such thing as a safe tan," and sadness ensues. What is the mole? This is like a different kind of mole in a wrestling themed program.
Yeah, no better way to kill the romantic vibe than to bring up skin cancer.
Yeah, what a buzzkill this was. So Hulk Hogan, dressed to the nines here in his next scene, a Canadian tuxedo with jean shirt, jean pants, a blue bandana, and blue cowboy boots, approaches CJ, Pamela Anderson, and discusses his background with the Venice Boys Athletic Club and how it saved him from a life on the streets. Imagine that, Way. Had it not been for this gym, Hulk Hogan would be a crazy drug dealer there on the streets of Venice.
No, yeah, very well could have been. Just, man, the level of acting in this scene.
It's horrendous.
Hulk Hogan and Pam Anderson. I always thought pro wrestling acting was terrible, but you could put any WWE backstage skit against the acting talents of these two who have been in movies, who have headlined movies. This is just bad.
How's your head?
Well, it's a lot better than the ski. It was totaled when it hit me.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Actually, thanking all of you again isn't the only reason I came to see you. I heard that the Baywatch lifeguards are doing a lot of work at the Venice Boys Youth Center.
You're right, you have.
The place means a lot to me. It's my old stomping ground. If it wasn't for Sonny and the athletic club, I probably would have been wild out on the streets.
Well, I can't imagine that. The lifeguards have been volunteering their time to help out Sonny and the kids. But we don't have enough money to save the property.
Has it been sold?
I'm afraid so. But we can't figure out who bought it.
I devote a lot of my time to kids. It's my way of giving something back.
They happen to have the benefit of retakes and editing, unlike pro wrestling. But man, the acting level is just as bad as anything you see on Raw.
So it leads to a scene where they're at the boys club and everyone's lifting weights with Hogan and Savage in like their wrestling, like spandex gear. True to form of what these guys would look like if you did walk into them in the street in 1996. And they talk about Hogan having to choose between drugs in the street or working out. That was his ultimatum. Drugs in the street or working out. And basically, a new developer has purchased this gym because it's not making money. The owner, Sonny, who had a striking resemblance to Judo Gene LaBelle, he just couldn't pay for the gym anymore, and they've sold it to a mysterious group of investors. And who would those investors be, Wei? Who are the developers who show up in a limousine?
Ric Flair. Kevin Sullivan.
With paint.
Yeah, lightning bolts painted on his forehead.
Can't leave the house without that.
And Big Van Vader, with his mask, of course.
Who had recently debuted in the WWF by the time this show had aired.
Yeah, wow. Oh, man. I thought this was awesome, though. I thought Flair was great. Yeah. What a tremendous surprise. Taskmaster just spends the entire scene laughing. But if you ever wanted to see Ric Flair in a scene on Baywatch with Pam Anderson, this was it. I thought he played the evil genius, Ric Flair, here, and I thought he was tremendous.
Yeah, I thought Flair was great here. Vader was very entertaining here. Savage calls Flair a washed-up ex-wrestler. And I don't know, this was 18 years ago. Less. It was only 16 years ago. And anyway, so they're arguing about the ownership of the Venice Boys Club. So they decide that they are going to settle this ownership the only way pro wrestlers know how to do, a no-holds-barred match. And this climaxes with Vader taking a basketball and crushing it. And Hogan yelling, "Saturday, on the beach, and bring those escrow papers, Flair."
It was just so kind of bizarre to see. But it reminded me of those Bash at the Beach Blast vignettes that they shot with
Cheatham.
Cheatham, yes. And Davey Boy and Sting. I don't know. I don't know what drives them to do these.
I thoroughly enjoyed it myself. Yeah. I didn't understand, though, what we set up. We set up two singles matches for control of this company, or this gym, that apparently Flair has already purchased. So, in these two matches, I mean, what if they split them?
That's true. I don't know.
You needed a tiebreaker here.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Brutus didn't get a role in here so he could have worked against Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah. He's probably ringside.
Oh, I'm sure he was. We got a heartwarming scene between Mitch and Stephanie about sunscreen. And Stephanie, what a downer here. If it's melanoma, I could die. This was just such a heavy storyline with such a wacky storyline to juxtapose the two.
Mm.
We had basketballs being crushed and being said, "This will be your head." And then over to skin cancer and basically like a PSA storyline for sunscreen.
Yeah. That's really what this was, and they weren't very subtle about it. It was like, what is that? Only number 8?
Oh, God. That was our next scene. Oh, sorry. First, we had Mitch and the boyfriend. I never caught this guy. Tom. His name was Tom.
Yeah.
And who's the dermatologist. Mitch invites him over to his house to discuss Stephanie's skin cancer. And Mitch, our journalistic lifeguard, asks Tom, "Off the record, what do you think?" This was acting at a whole new level here from the Hoff. And then we go to the Yasmin Bleeth scene, who is in storyline Stephanie Holden's sister, Carolyn. And she's using copper tone. They do a close-up of the copper tone here. I thought this was just going to be product placement for the sunscreen you should be using. Instead, it was a warning of sunscreen you should not be using because it only has an 8 rating.
Number 8? That's all you're putting on?
That's what I always use, Steph. So do you.
Well, it's not enough.
Well, I reapply it.
When? How often? I mean, number eight, you know what that means? That means if your skin burns in 10 minutes, you just have 80 minutes of protection. That's just a little over an hour. You work an 8 to 10 hour shift every day, in the sun, in and out of the water. You tell me you reapply 8 to 10 times a day?
No.
And if your skin burns in just 5 minutes, that's just 40 minutes of protection. That's it. Don't you realize that our job makes us prime candidates for skin cancer?
Steph, what happened to your leg?
Wait, 8 is a very low rating for sunscreen. It's basically just asking for trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's at least better than what you would later on find these people using on the beach. Have you ever suntanned?
Yeah. I mean, I've gone on the beach numerous times. I use sunblock. I have got sunburnt in my life.
What number do you use?
You know, I can't remember what I used to use, but now I use like 30.
30 is good. The 30 is much higher than 8. That's what I use as well.
Yeah, this, after Stephanie gave Carolyn her lecture, this dramatic music came up and Stephanie, the bandage on her leg was visible and Carolyn discovers this bandage and I think she put 4 and 4 together and got 8.
This whole thing is just so cheesy. Like with the music, with the serious acting, it was. I suppose it's like a soap opera, really, except with different cameras and maybe more budget.
Well, then we got this scene that just, it had really no connection to anything. It was just, well, we need an extra scene with Hulk Hogan and Pamela Anderson. So they saved a child who got trapped between a bunch of rocks and featured Hulk Hogan press slamming a boulder. This was just so unnecessary. It had no connection to the plot at all. It was just Hulk Hogan lifting a boulder above his head, and I enjoyed it immensely.
It was very funny, especially when the kid, when the kid's friend falls and the look on his face as he yells, "Connor!" as the kid trips. It was highly amusing. And it's always funny to-
I just saw Hulk Hogan! Stop making stories up! What have I told you about that? Yeah, just like the campiest writing ever on this show. Then we got the best scene of the entire show, which, as Wei mentioned, was Stephanie Holden going crazy on the beach lecturing sunbathers.
Sunbathers who are only using baby oil. What else? Some type of suntan lotion.
There was one guy who used sunblock, a black gentleman.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, are you using sunblock? Yes. Good, good. Didn't really add emphasis to her point here.
She comes across like she's being extra paranoid and that that you should really be concerned. To me, though, this was like, this made her look like she was wrong, like she was being too crazy about I don't know, sunblock.
Lighten up.
Yeah. Come on.
The only thing missing from this scene was like a camera like doing a 360 around Stephanie as she just yells to the sky, "You're all going to die." That would have capped off this scene well.
I don't get that reference. What is that?
Just a crazy end to a crazy scene.
Oh, okay.
So Tom shows up. For whatever reason, Mitch here was the one consoling Stephanie, the ex-boyfriend, and the current boyfriend shows up to inform her, "Hey, you do have melanoma." And they start discussing the risks of whether the melanoma has localized or metastasized. Sounded like a Dusty Rhodes promo.
I don't know. I couldn't help but laugh through almost all of this. Is there?
Well, this was done so campy. I mean, it's hard to really take this seriously, even with something as serious as cancer, in a show that just featured Hulk Hogan lifting up a boulder, saving Connor.
Oh,
I mean, this whole show was nuts.
Yeah.
What did this show need, though, Wei? A musical montage to Hulk Hogan's WCW theme as he works out on the beach under the American flag with kids wearing his merchandise and Hulk Hogan running in a Gold's Gym shirt and spandex shorts with Randy Savage joining him.
Oh, God. Anytime you see Hulk Hogan run, it's very amusing. It's like he kind of runs like a fat girl in that he doesn't have much mobility in his arms. And so it's kind of like a, you know what I mean.
From there, this all led up to, first we had, we had Stephanie and we had Mitch walking on the beach. And this, swear to God, this was the dialogue we got. Stephanie asks Mitch, remember that cruise we went on together, as they're discussing when they used to be a couple? And Mitch replies, the one where you were shot and fell overboard? And they laugh about this. Oh, yeah. Remember that. We've been through so much. The one where you were shot and fell overboard. Oh, I love this show. This was just great. I don't know what this scene had to do with anything. I just took that away from it. Then we got Media Day with Randy Savage, I hope, sending a royalty check to superstar Billy Graham for basically just completely stealing from him in the lead up to his match with Ric Flair.
Yeah, which is interesting. I mean, you're Randy Savage. You don't have to steal from anybody. In fact, like, they're all pretty much cutting the most well-known promos of their characters. You know what I mean? Like, all the cliches that they would all traditionally throw in for themselves. It was fun. I thought this was a fun segment to watch these guys just cut promos.
And then we go to the matches way, and these were all taped from the 1995 Bash at the Beach and just kind of shown in clip form with your favorite added sound effects. So this would have been done in July of 95.
No, I didn't realize. I didn't realize it was from the actual pay-per-view.
Yep. It did not cost a thing to go to this show, and thus they had a gigantic crowd on the beach. To me, this would be the least enjoyable way to watch wrestling, is in a crowd of what looked to be 100,000 watching a ring, all people standing.
So what was the actual build-up for this? With this pay-per-view, do you remember much of the build-up?
I was watching WCW at the time, so I could not really tell you.
Yeah, wow, amazing.
So we started off with Flair and Savage, and the sound effects we have discussed didn't really work here. Clotheslines here sounded like punches. We saw a bunch of lumberjacks on the floor, the Nasty Boys, Jim Duggan, who got their, I guess, 2 seconds of fame here on Baywatch, and Savage pinned him after a double axe handle off the top. And then we get ready for the main event, Hulk Hogan and Vader, when all of a sudden, the crew starts putting up a cage, and Pamela Anderson watches this from the back. Hulk, they're putting up a cage. Dun, dun, dun. What a swerve way.
Yeah, yeah. That wasn't part of the deal?
Not at all. And so, as we mentioned, this is when Vader had already debuted in the WWF, and they go to the clip of this match where Vader is unmasked during the match. Hogan eventually sold for a bit, came back, leg drop, slammed him. Then they cut away to the crowd where they announce Hulk Hogan is the winner. And just like that, he's the winner here, because the actual finish of this match was he climbed over the cage to the floor. And I guess in street rules way, that just isn't a manly way to win. And therefore, we got like a non-finish here, and Hogan was just the winner.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I was so confused because I thought the editing was so awful. He goes for a leg drop, then the clothesline, and then another leg drop. But then they don't even show the pinfall. They just showed him getting his arms lifted up. So there was no drama at all to this match.
No. So the babyfaces made a clean sweep, thus winning the ownership of this gym and saving it. I don't know how that works. But it does.
In pro wrestling.
The law.
Yeah,
and I guess they're magically funding this gym now. They have no more financial woes because of two wrestling matches.
It was so straightforward, no swerve, no nothing. These guys said they're going to win this match. They did it. That was it. It probably took like 3 minutes to write this entire episode.
Yeah, nothing greater than seeing the babyfaces take the property deed and celebrate on the beach. Oh, just man. Great. And in case you were having too much fun, we brought you back to life with the Debbie Downer finish to this show with Tom informing Stephanie and Mitch that the cancer has spread, and Stephanie reluctantly looks down knowing she's going to die.
Right.
What a sad ending.
What happened with her?
This is how they killed her off.
Was it with cancer?
I believe so. I wasn't really watching after this. All I know is they did eventually kill off Stephanie's character about a year later. So it was a long...
Didn't she drown or something?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, she dies.
Here, let's... I looked ahead here. And the final episode she was on was February 10th of 97. Disaster strikes on Stephanie and Tom's honeymoon. But even worse, when the boat sinks and Stephanie realizes there is a kid missing, she finds Trisha in the cabin and risks her life. Then she... I don't know. Lands on Stephanie, crushing her. She dies, and they hold a funeral service for her at Baywatch, and Mitch holds a speech. So, yeah, she was crushed by something on a cruise.
Okay. So this cancer really played no part.
I guess not. Oh, my God. Listen, this was the follow-up episode, way, to her death. CJ is convinced that a... I can't read this seriously. CJ is convinced that a stray dog found by her and Caroline possesses the reincarnated soul of the late Stephanie.
Oh, that's awesome.
I want to review that episode.
You know, this Baywatch has a lot in common with professional wrestling. You have really ridiculous writing, and you have... Playboy models trying to act. So it's very much like WWE.
I think on some slow weeks, Wei, we could go back one day to Baywatch. I think our audience would accept it because I thoroughly enjoyed the camp value of Baywatch here. And, as bad as wrestling gets, we've never seen, a reincarnated soul in the form of a dog in wrestling.
You're
to
right.
To the best of my knowledge.
You're absolutely right. At least, like, pro wrestling for it has certain limitations when you're dealing with the way it's produced, the way it's shot in a live environment. Whereas with a drama, like a tape drama, multicam tape drama like Baywatch, you can go nuts. You can really do some really stupid, crazy shit.
Absolutely. I'm just glad Vince Russo was never a Baywatch viewer. We could have gotten some great crossover.
Yeah, we don't know that.
All right. Well, that was Baywatch. I love this episode. I really can't say anything bad about it. These 40 minutes just flew by for me. I loved hearing the theme song. I loved the acting on this. I give this show for what it's what it desired or what it set out to deliver. Give this one an 8 out of 10. Way.
Wow. Well, I guess we have different judging criteria. I think I saw this episode and I was just sad that that this passed for entertainment for so many years. It's just poorly done TV, and really it's really an excuse to see Pam Anderson in her bathing suit, and really nothing more in my opinion. I don't know, 4.5.
No. Oh. You didn't get the enjoyment that I certainly did out of this.
I certainly enjoyed it, but you have to watch it from, I suppose, from a different lens. And I don't know. Maybe this time I was watching it from a more how much work was put into this, really? And how different is this exactly from I don't know, a swimsuit video, like a hot girl's swimsuit video.
All right. Well, some of you folks did watch this, and you left us some feedback, which I'm excited to get into here. So let's start off with Alexander Rios. I'm going to talk a little bit about both the episode's WCW plot and the non-wrestling plot. First, the non-wrestling. As a standalone episode, this had such a sadness to it with Stephanie Holden, played by Alexandra Paul, diagnosed with skin cancer, which is quite a serious plot to be thrown mid-season. Usually shows have these major twists either during the season finale or the premiere, but instead it was lumped into the WCW-based episode. By the way, in case anyone is curious, Stephanie had surgery the very next episode and was cured of skin cancer, and her doctor proposed to her. And the one after that, they spoofed Charlie's Angels. My God. Okay, well, I guess the skin cancer didn't really last that long at all. Now on to the WCW plot, which, to be honest, did nothing for me. This was during the tail end of my four-year hiatus of watching wrestling. I didn't really care about WCW until the NWO, and the plot for this episode was the biggest contrived attempt to making Hulk Hogan even more of a hero than he was not in his real life. I mean, Ric Flair buying a gym that Hogan used to work out at as a kid and threatening to demolish it? Come on. And of course, what does this lead to? A title match? In a steel cage, no less? This feels like Spider-Man all over again, only this time not done anywhere near as well. The beginning of the episode where Hogan and Savage are jet skiing and talking in character was vomit-inducing. It just goes to show that pro wrestling should never be meshed into other TV shows, at least when Shawn Michaels guest starred on Baywatch. He guest starred as a character for the show and not himself. Anyway, Hogan won the match, the gym stayed open, and they all live happily ever after. As a standalone episode, I have to give this a 4 out of 10. And we have another episode we could review down the roadway.
Yeah, yeah. I look forward to it. We have The Best There Is from Winnipeg, who says, the WCW tie-in to this episode was about as campy as camp can get, with seemingly every cheesy cliche in the book crammed in here. But then again, this is Baywatch we're talking about, so I was expecting nothing less than that going in. Ric Flair buys Hulk Hogan's childhood gym, so Hogan and Randy Savage have to get it back by winning wrestling matches against Flair and Vader. Otherwise, all the local children will grow up to be drug addicts and prostitutes. Awesome, brother. Flair was the MVP of this show, but that's hardly surprising as he's the MVP of nearly everything he's involved in. And I think Hogan sold more for the Wave Runner than he did for Flair and Vader combined in all of their matches in 95. The continuity during the Hogan-Vader match was poor, as you could see Vader's mask appear, disappear, and reappear throughout. By the way, the episode aired in February of 1996, so Vader was already in the WWF when this was on. There is also the skin cancer plot, and I know they're trying to address a serious issue and educate people about it, but it was so over-the-top preachy that they may as well have just flashed the message, wear sunblock, goddammit, or you're gonna die, on the screen the entire time. I mean, this makes 2012 WWE marketing look subtle in comparison. All in all, the wrestling plot was enjoyable camp, and if I were rating it on that alone, I'd give it a 7 out of 10, but the annoying preachiness of the cancer plot drops the episode as a whole down to 5 out of 10.
We move on to Shy Avigan. This is the first time in 16 years I've watched an episode, and I can't believe I enjoyed watching this, even as a teenager. Magically moving rocks, defying the logic of physical action movie soundbites, Vader wearing his gear backwards, we had it all in here. As dramatic as they tried to make it, I just had a hard time getting attached to the skin cancer story. Besides the storyline being so simple and rushed, I didn't protect myself. I have cancer. I'm gonna die. For some weird reason, some morons decided it would be a cool idea to mix it with the episode where we bring grown 40-plus-year-old men dressed in colorful tights, painted eyebrows, and a weird mask to battle for a cheap outdoor gym. And why were there two matches anyway? What would have happened in the case of a tie? Would the kids still have their gym? I was more devastated by the fact that a few months before rooting for the Mega Powers, Pamela Anderson was rooting for Big Daddy Cool at WrestleMania 11. The biggest problem I had with Baywatch even back then, and I don't recall any big drama lasting more than an episode or two. People drowned, but nobody ever died. Hell, even the cancer storyline ended in the next episode. I just read Stephanie did die eventually, getting crushed to death by a mast in the hands of Mitch and Tom. How convenient. And yes, over the years, we've seen some weird and dysfunctional relationships in wrestling. But the love triangle here was something else. So let me get it straight. Mitch and Dr. Tom are best pals. Mitch dated and fucked Stephanie. They broke up but stayed BFFs. And now his best friend is dating and fucking her. But Mitch is keeping it cool and being there for her. So cool that he still keeps her framed photos on his home desk. I was waiting for a group hug in the ending scene, but they cut to the outro. John, please read the campy intro lyrics for us. He gives this 36 double D out of 10.
Are you going to read those lyrics?
Oh, I don't even. Yeah, you read the next one. Let's see. I never even noticed what the lyrics are, just that it's a great song.
Brian from Buffalo says, the million-dollar question is which Pollock likes least, an unprotected chair shot to the head or an unprotected Wave Runner shot to the head? I like that Macho Man wore the Macho Man brand bandana and trunks for this episode. Hulk Hogan and Pam Anderson, I smell a sex tape and a new Reveal Way episode coming. Why are Savage and Hogan working out in full wrestling gear? Vader popping the basketball was a high highlight, as was Hogan running into the water with boots and socks on and doing Pam Anderson's lifeguard job for her in the campy's 80s-inspired workout montage. The horrible sound effects dubbed in during the matches were hilarious, and Macho Man throws Slim Jims into the crowd before the match and was holding a handful of them afterwards. You can't make this stuff up. Why was Sullivan in this episode? This was cheese at its finest and good for many a laugh. Makes me miss watching reruns of Thunder in Paradise on TBS.
I'm reading the lyrics here to the Baywatch theme song, and it sounds like The Rock's Twitter account, to be honest. Some people stand in the darkness, afraid to step into the light. Some people need to help somebody when the edge of surrender's in sight.
Hmm. Okay. All right, you could stop.
You're not enjoying this. In us, we all have the power, but sometimes it's so hard to see. And instinct is stronger than reason. It's just human nature to me. Yeah, this the lyrics really don't hold up to the song it produces.
Yeah. Okay.
Next up, we've got DP Banks. Things like this is nothing new to wrestling. If you think back, and I'm old enough to, the WWF showcased their talents on the A-Team back in the early to mid-80s to help promote WrestleMania and the Rock and Wrestling tie-in. The beginning to mid-90s era of wrestling was a little like the 80s era, but without the money it was making. I can understand why WCW would do this, because Baywatch was the most watched television show in the world at the time. This era of entertainment was all about being cheesy, but if I had to pick, I would choose the A-Team all day long.
Our final piece of feedback. This is why I love wrestling. Camp and just plain fun. Not everything needs to be super serious and real with storylines about people shooting on their boss. It's men in tights bouncing off of ropes. Sure, wrestling can have really awesome storytelling and athleticism, but it's one of the reasons I love listening to these podcasts. John and Way's deadpan delivery nailed just how batshit insane slash dumb wrestling is, and yet many of us in our 20s still watch. Some have careers based around it. Wrestling can stretch the boundaries of logic because of what it is essentially, and having a wrestling storyline in one of the silliest dramas of the 90s is just perfect. It was great to see Flair look just plain old like he did for 20 years, and not the leathery, sunburnt old he's been since 2003. Cancer storyline aside, I had an awesome time watching this, and it was shorter than a pay-per-view. A 10 out of 10.
Whoa, a 10 out of 10 we get to close out the feedback. So thank you, everyone, who contributed here and caught this episode of Baywatch. A very well-remembered series in American history and Canadian history by that extension as well. So thank you to everyone who checked this out. Next week, Way, it is our three-year anniversary of this little podcast, and we've had many different directions we've been discussing all week to go in with this show. But what are we going to review? You let us know.
Well, of course, we did put out the poll out there whether or not people want us to review China's latest release, Queen of the Ring. That is the battle, the Royal Rumble inspired gangbang that she is a part of. And the results of that poll, 81.6 of you vote yes.
Sick.
19.3 say no. So we have had a lot of debate about this, and primarily from my end, and me just thinking, God, I saw those screen caps. I don't know if I could go along with this.
It looks really sad. Like, it looks like sad porn. Like, and this, there's nothing worse than sad porn.
This really could be the first review that I've refused to do, simply based on how disgusting it looks. It's just, oh, man. Dude surrounding her. And we're not just talking porn stars. We're talking porn stars dressed as pro wrestlers. Porn stars dressed as John Cena's. I saw Rey Mysterio. I saw Doink the Clown here. Like, this is going to have the potential to scar me for life, especially from watching pro wrestling. Nonetheless, we are a show of the people, and if 81% of you wish to see it, we will be doing a review, but however, this will be, it's not going to be a typical review. How are we going to do this, John?
Well, people are going to have to tune in.
In addition to that, though, because it might be a shorter review next week, we will also be doing other things.
I just want to make my one China joke as we end this. Next week's review way, what will China and Connor have in common?
You can tell me.
Both will be trapped between a rock and a hard place.
That's very good.
I think that's great, actually.
Oh, man.
The late Sledgehammer is in this movie, folks. I had no idea this man had died when we talked last week about trying to get an interview with this guy. He died.
Who does he play?
The Rock.
Oh.
Adding just another veil of creepiness to this entire adult film is that we are going to see a man living... I don't know. We're going to watch a dead guy.
Oh, this is going to be
his final picture.
This is going to be the weirdest, most awkward thing we've ever had to do, John. Period. It's going to be weird. It's going to be really
Wei was not down to review this, and I said, that's fine. We don't have to do it. But Wei Ting is a man of the people, and he said, no, for the good of the show, we have to do it. So any ill will you can thrust upon the 81.3% of you that voted on Review Away Active.
Yeah, and you know, just a warning, this is probably not a podcast you're going to want to listen to with family.
It depends what kind of family you are, though. Maybe you guys will enjoy the comedy that this will produce. But we're not just going to be chatting porn next week. We are also we'll post a thread up this weekend and just a kind of general feedback to the show, what you've hated about this podcast and other stuff you've enjoyed. And myself and Wei, we are going to provide our picks for our best shows and our worst show.
Our personal picks.
We should definitely do these at the end of the show because the worst show, I don't want to put a deadline before we do next week's show.
What?
Next week's podcast could be our worst one. I want it to be fresh in our minds if we want to make a slight change of our worst show into next week's. This is a great sell job for next week's show.
Well, whether good or bad, I think people like to hear it. And that goes, you know, it goes for our podcast too.
All right. Well, we're going to get out of here, folks. We'll be back next week with our 3-year anniversary show. Queen of the Ring, available at or through Vivid Entertainment if you care to go out and seek this for some perspective on what we will be reviewing. And then in the meantime, everybody, lots of stuff you can download. The Law from this past weekend featuring Booker T, a gigantic edition of Review of Raw from Monday night where we talked about hugging and mental breakdowns and Paul Heyman, lots of stuff from Raw Monday night. And then we're back later this week with Review and Impact. We've got Super Review and Review a Raw next Monday with Damian Abraham, Nate Milton, as well as Wei and myself. Lots of stuff. And Saturday night, very special appearance, a Wei Ting public appearance at the WWE SmackDown live event at Cops Coliseum. Come to Gibson's Lounge at 5:30, have dinner with Wei Ting, and then stick around for the house show. So lots of stuff coming up, Wei. Countdown to Hamilton is on.
Yeah.
It'll be a lot of fun. Man, I just feel that your sickness has got nothing on the idea of this review next week. I feel it's taken more out of you.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. It'll I don't know. It could last an hour, it could last 5 minutes or 30 seconds.
All right. Well, we're gonna get out of here. I think the only way to do that, to lift everyone's spirits, is go out with a little David Hasselhoff to cap off this review of Baywatch featuring the WCW wrestlers. So we will chat with you next week. Go check out liveaudiowrestling.com. Join the Law message board. Follow us on Twitter. All that other fun stuff. And we will chat with you guys later on this week. Jump in my car. Spin.
Get her out of here.